So now we're going to chant together the verse 26. Ata cha enam nitya jatam nityam va manyase mritam tatapi tvam mahabaho na enam shochitam arasi atachainam nitya jatam nityam va manyase mritam tatapi tvam mahabaho nainam shochitam arasi atachainam nitya jatam nityam va manyase mritam tatapi tvam mahabaho nainam shochitam arasi atachainam nitya jatam nityam va manyase mritam tatapi tvam mahabaho nainam shochitam arasi.
Atachainam nityam jatam
atachainam nitya jatam
nitya va manyasi mritam
nityam va manyasi mritam
tatapi tvam mahabaho
tatapi tvam mahabaho
nainam shochitam arasi
nainam shochitam arasi.
Atachainam nitya jatam
atachainam nitya jatam
nityam va manyase mritam tatapi tvam mahabaho
tatapi tvam mahabaho
nainam shochitam arhasi
nainam shochitam arhasi.
Atachainam nitya jatam nityam va manyase mritam
tatapi tvam mahabaho nainam shochitam arasi.
Excuse me. Ladies?
Atachainam nitya jatam nityam va manyase mritam tatapi tvam mahabaho nainam shochitam arhasi.
Atachainam nitya jatam nityam va manyase mritam
tatapi tvam mahabaho
nainam shochitam arasi. If, however, cha also, enam, this soul, nitya jatam, always born, nityam, forever, ba, either, manyase, you so think, mritam, dead, tatapi, still, tvam, you, mahabaho, O mighty armed one, na, never, enam, about the soul, shochitam, to lament, arhasi, deserve. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. If, however, you think that the soul or the symptoms of life will always be born and die forever, you still have no reason to lament, O mighty armed. Purport by His Divine Grace. There is always a class of philosophers, almost akin to the Buddhists, who do not believe in the separate existence of the soul beyond the body. When Lord Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, it appears that such philosophers existed and that they were known as the Lokayitakas and Vaibhashikas. Such philosophers maintain that life symptoms take place at a certain mature condition of material combination. The modern material scientists and materialist philosophers also think similarly. According to them, the body is a combination of physical elements, and at a certain stage, the life symptoms develop by interaction of the physical and chemical elements. The science of anthropology is based on this philosophy. Currently, many pseudo-religions, now becoming fashionable in America, this was written in a long time ago, 60-something, or also imagine how much more fashionable they are now than they were then, are also adhering to this philosophy, as are the nihilistic, non-devotional Buddhist sects. Even if Arjun did not believe in the existence of the soul, as in the Vaibhashika philosophy, there would still have been no cause for lamentation. No one laments the loss of a certain bulk of chemicals and stops discharging his prescribed duty. On the other hand, in modern science, in scientific warfare, so many tons of chemicals are wasted for achieving victory over the enemy. According to the Vaibhashika philosophy, the so-called soul, or atma, vanishes along with the deterioration of the body. So in any case, whether Arjuna accepted the Vedic conclusion that there is an atomic soul, or he did not believe in the existence of the soul, he still had no reason to lament. According to this theory, since there are so many living entities generating out of matter every moment, and so many of them are being vanquished every moment, there is no need to grieve for such incidents. If there were no rebirth of the soul, Arjuna had no reason to be afraid of being affected by sinful reactions due to his killing his grandfather and teacher. But at the same time, Krishna sarcastically addressed Arjuna as Mahabaho, mighty armed, because at least he did not accept the theory of the Vaibhashikas, which leaves aside the Vedic wisdom. As a Kshatriya, Arjuna belonged to the Vedic culture, and it behooved him to continue to follow its principles. Tachainam nityajatam nityam va manyase mritam tatapi tvam mahabaho nainam shochitam arasi. Srila Prabhupada many times used to Srila Prabhupada would many times point out that this Krishna consciousness is a spiritual science. It's not, you know, a sectarian religion. And thank you. There are innumerable philosophies to explain what we see before our eyes in this world. We should be very careful in the way that we receive this message of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is not a dogma. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives many different arguments to Arjuna from many different perspectives. And those arguments are meant to address the doubts of different people in different states of awareness, in different places, and different that have different duties. So we have to be careful to extract the principles. You know, we shouldn't think that just because the scripture says, you know, we in the Bhagavad Gita says we should fight, that we should go out and all of us start to fight everybody. This is not intelligent perception and intelligent assimilation of the scripture. Arjuna was in a particular situation. The earth had polarized. There was a demoniac element that was prominent, and therefore it was difficult for the people in general to follow their religious persuasions. And so Krishna wanted to change the sovereignty of the earth, to give facility to the devotees of the Lord. So here he's appealing, you know, this first section of the Bhagavad Gita, he's appealing philosophically to Arjuna. He's saying, actually, you know, the fact is that we are different than the body, and therefore when we lose the body, or when the body is passes away, there's really no reason to lament for the body. The body is just about its chemicals. I mean, even if you accept that consciousness comes from interaction of chemicals, still nobody laments the loss of chemicals. You know, when you put some chemicals down your drain to clear the drain, you don't like cry and start to, you know, go through some separation, you know, from the chemicals. So if philosophically you are in one of these schools of thought that accepts that, you know, the consciousness just comes from a combination of chemicals, and that's it, and nothing, and then after this life there's nothing, still you don't have any reason to lament. Why should you lament? Just, you know, live now and do your duty and, you know, carry on, you know, with your life. So Krishna is addressing Arjuna here as Mahabaho, and Prabhupada points out at the end of the purport that he's saying this sarcastically, actually. He says, hey, mighty armed, you know, what are you doing? You know, dropping your bow and crying and lamenting, when the fact is that people need your protection. You're a kshatriya, that is your duty, that's your prescribed duty. We may have a different prescribed duty in life. We may be, I don't know, whatever we are in life, a scientist or a politician or a farmer or, you know, whatever we're doing, you know, office worker or whatever. We all of us know the principle, all of us, that if we're reliable over time, then people have faith in us. Hari bol, hari bol. And this, he's in another state. Sorry about that. Hare Krishna. No reason to lament for the living or the dead. Still, we have to take care. That's her duty, so she's doing her duty. So the point being that the universe is organized. There are laws of nature, and we are all being governed by those laws of nature. None of us are independent. None of us can do just what we want to do whenever we want to do. The American, dream, I guess, of freedom is something like that, right? You should be able to do whenever you want to. But actually, the universe is not structured like that. I feel guilty. The baby just got taken under the cold. This is not very good.
There's another building back there.
Well, right now I see this thing going up and down like this, right in front of the back of the door, and it looks like that's the baby being put up and down back to the door. Not very good up there. Yeah. I felt bad seeing it. It was out in the cold, and
okay.
What can I say? I'm lamenting for the body. But my point in saying that, I mean that it's not that we don't feel compassion for those who are suffering. If we don't feel compassion for those who are suffering, if we're callous to the sufferings of others, then we're not actually. This is not an exalted position. It's not that in the end of the. I think I said this last time. I hope I don't repeat myself, but. At the end of the first chapter, there's a verse right at the end. Sanjaya said, Arjun, this is page 65. Sanjaya said, Arjun, having thus spoken on the battlefield, cast aside his bow and arrows and sat down in the chariot, his mind overwhelmed with grief. So then Srila Prabhupada states, while observing the situation of his enemy, Arjun stood up on the chariot, but he was so afflicted with lamentation that he sat down again, setting aside his bow and arrows. Such a kind and soft-hearted person in the devotional service of the Lord is fit to receive self-knowledge. So it's not so easy to understand spiritual life and Krishna consciousness. There are so many apparently contrary things and difficult things to try to understand why God would teach, his devotee to act in such a way as to end the lives of so many people on the earth. And nowadays, there's a huge misconception in the extreme application of different religious principles and different sectarian religions that is causing people to be educated, like from babyhood, to hate another group of people just because they have a different culture, a different religion, or a different color of skin, or different whatever. And this is not religion. And this is not what Bhagavad Gita is actually teaching. Bhagavad Gita is teaching that each one of us has a duty according to the psychophysiological nature that we've acquired and the stage of advancement, the stage of life that we are in particularly. And we have duties to others. None of us are. We heard in the car on the way coming over, no man is an island. Everything is interdependent in this world, and therefore, our duty is to keep ourselves functioning according to the laws of material nature, and to assist others, as best we can, according to our capacity, to also act within the laws of material nature. This is real religion. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam, Krishna says. That real religious principles are the instructions coming from God, the orders coming from God. So those orders are not so easy to understand. Therefore, if you take one verse out of context, I think I mentioned this last time in the last class, there was a very demoniac person named Charles Manson who performed a heinous act and in a ritual kind of way sacrificed some people in the name of God knows what, And then when he was on trial, he held up the Bhagavad Gita and he said, you see, it says here that nobody, the self slays not and cannot be slain. So then why are you trying me? you know, nobody died, we're all eternal. So this is misapplication of spiritual philosophy. So we have to be very, very careful that we get it right and that we can answer people's questions correctly so they can understand that this is not a violent religion. In 16th chapter, you may turn to the 16th chapter, the first three verses. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity, simplicity, non-violence, truthfulness, freedom from anger, renunciation, tranquility, aversion to fault-finding, compassion for all living entities, freedom from covetousness, gentleness, modesty, steady determination, vigor, forgiveness, fortitude, cleanliness, and freedom from envy and from the passion for honor. These transcendental qualities, O son of Bart, belong to godly men endowed with divine nature. Of course, we could give a lecture on each one of these qualities. I'm not going to go into the details of each one of these qualities. The point I'm making is that because Krishna is instructing Arjuna to fight, he is not promoting violence. It's different, what he's asking Arjuna to do. And if you look at the 13th chapter, there's a list of what is knowledge, isn't it? 8 to 12. Ready? Page 573. Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence. There it is again. You see? So Krishna is repeating this instruction. This, in this case, he's saying what is knowledge. In the other list, he's saying what is divine quality. What determines whether a person has divine qualities or not. You see? Tolerance. You notice there's many of the same items here. Simplicity. Approaching a bona fide spiritual master. Cleanliness. Steadiness. Self-control. Renunciation of the objects of sense gratification. Absence of false ego. The perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease. Detachment. Freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest. Even-mindedness amidst pleasant and unpleasant events. Constant and unalloyed devotion to me. Aspiring to live in a solitary place. Detachment from the general mass of people. Accepting the importance of self-realization and philosophical truth, a search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. So it's pretty clear, you know, the qualities that we're supposed to cultivate. So this is the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita, especially. It is the basis, it is the basic summary, short form, of all the Vedic scriptures. And it teaches us how to behave in our day-to-day life. Not just how to behave, but the mentality that we have to have in order to behave properly. And so our duty as devotees is to apply these instructions into our lives, and cultivate these qualities. That we must do consciously cultivate these qualities. When we catch ourselves getting overwhelmed by anger or lust or greed or all these things, we have to catch ourselves. Yato, yato, nishchalati manas chanchalam astiram tatostato yunamait atman nevam ashamnayat. From wherever the mind wanders away from the lotus feet of Krishna or from the remembrance that what we're doing is actually meant to be connected with Krishna, whatever we're doing. Here, the classic example in Bhagavad Gita is he's a warrior. It's his duty to fight. So Krishna is saying to him, tasmat mam anusmarayujicha. Tasmat sarvasukalishu, mam anusmarayujicha. Thank you, scholar, pandit. You know, not that we just sit in the corner and smoke ganja and let Krishna, fight the battle for us. No, that's his point. That's his point. We're supposed to do our duty. We're supposed to do the duty properly. We're supposed to see everyone as parts and parcels of Krishna. We're supposed to see Krishna in everyone. Later on in the sixth chapter, it describes sarva-bhuta-stamatmanam, sarva-bhutani-chatmani, ikshite sayuktatma, sarvatra-samadarshana, sarvatra-samadarshana. Equal vision means when you see that the soul is there in everyone and that Krishna is there next to the soul in everyone. And we give that deep respect to everyone as part of Krishna and special deep respect because Krishna is there. We have to see like this. This is the test of whether or not we've actually heard. Therefore, at the end, Krishna says to Arjuna, so now have you heard? Now do you understand? Are you still confused? Are you still bewildered? And after hearing all these instructions, after hearing all of his excuses being taken away, one after another, on different levels, addressed the issue of the pride of the Kshatriya. Kshatriyas are by nature proud, and they sometimes get angry because otherwise how can they fight? You can't be a Kshatriya and a warrior and protect the citizens against evil, and there is evil in the material world. There's always going to be that element. And you can't be the person to go in front and protect the others unless you feel this emotion. This is the nature of the Kshatriya. It's passion. So this is necessary. So it's not that we, as Arjun, as Krishna is telling Arjun, give up our duty that is inherent in our nature and just, go to the forest and try to imitate, being a sage or, whatever. No, we have to do the duty that we have, but we have to connect it with Krishna. This is what yoga means. Yoga means to connect, to link with the Supreme, that linking comes from constant remembrance. So the purpose of doing our duties, the purpose of cultivating the knowledge, the purpose of doing everything in this world is to link our remembrance, to remain conscious of what we're doing and why we're doing what we're doing for the pleasure of Krishna. And when we see Krishna in the hearts of others, whether it be our wife and children, or whether it be our friends, or whether it be our employees or employers or whatever, this is of course a very elevated, lofty position. It's not that we can imitate this. It's not, I'm saying you can just turn a switch and that it happens. No, it's a very deep thing to be able to actually perform all your duties in a way that you remember that the persons you're dealing with are parts of Krishna. This is very, very elevated consciousness, Krishna consciousness. So we shouldn't expect that it's going to be easy, and therefore we should be very determined. If you these qualities of divine qualities and knowledge, they include if you remember, a determination, steady determination, vigor. You see, it's not that when you become spiritually advanced, you just sit back, twirl a lotus flower and smile. Yeah. Spiritual. Okay. No, relief. Now I'm a soul. That's it's There's a lot more to it than that. There's a lot more to it than that. Vigor. You know, we have to vigorously pursue this. Huh? We have to vigorously try to understand. We have to vigorously try to keep our minds on our business. That's why this process of book distribution that is being promoted here by my Ishta Dev over here is so important, because you can't really do that service unless you keep your mind on the business in Krishna and what you're doing. It's not possible. Once you stop, as soon as you stop, it just goes by and you're like, what, you know? You have to keep your mind on your business. And that is the purpose. That is the purpose of the regulation, the purpose of your rounds, the purpose of doing austerities, the purpose of keeping yourself clean, the purpose of doing all these things is to fix yourself in spiritual platform so that you can actually control your mind and senses. And spiritual life is not sentimental. And that's what this verse is saying. He's saying, even if you don't accept this philosophy that there's a soul and that there's life after death and these things, even if you're just thinking that it's just a bag of chemicals that, you know, acts and reacts and consciousness comes and then when it stops, the body stops and consciousness goes, still, why are you lamenting? If that's your philosophy, then still, why are you lamenting? You don't lament over a bag of chemicals, losing a bag of chemicals. So this is knowledge. This is philosophy. This is spiritual science. And we have to actually act. We can't, it's not just sentiment. Spiritual life is not just sentiment. It's not just emotion. The spiritual emotion is there. It's underneath everything. The soul has original, inherent spiritual emotions. But it's being covered by all the, we were reading, Vaishya and I have been reading the last few days of Kapila Dev's teachings and the creation and all the wonders of how the different elements are created and the basic blueprint of how those elements are combined together and to form senses and sense objects and environments and knowledge and working acquiring senses and all these things that are then put together in the factory of the creative, you know, energy of the Lord, and how it all fits together, and how what it's all meant to do, and what it's all meant, and in those descriptions, it's described that even when all the elements are there, even when all the material elements are there, even when all the plan is made, and the subtle forms are there, and the sense objects, and the senses, and everything is there, still it can't come together. It can't come together, you know, until a certain stage when Krishna enters. Even when the demigods that are manifested to control the basic elements, you know, and they enter when the universal form is created and they enter into the different parts of the universal form to activate, you know, when the sun enters into the eyes of the universal form and the, anyway, all these different things. Still, it doesn't come to life. It doesn't come to life until the consciousness enters, you know, until the Supreme Soul enters into the universal form. So therefore, our ability to do what we're doing properly in right consciousness that will get us the goal and not just, you know, some money or, you know, impress other people or whatever it is that we do, material motives, whatever material motives we have, we can't do it unless we're in the right consciousness. But that doesn't mean that we're in the right consciousness, that we necessarily have to stop doing what we're doing. This is the point of the Bhagavad Gita. At the end of the Gita, Arjun goes out to fight. He's in the battle, he's supposed to fight, Krishna wants him to fight, he gets all bewildered by emotion and by sentiment. And he says, no, I can't because, you know, it's going to hurt somebody. But the fact is that that's what was needed to protect the citizenry. And they didn't go, you know, into a major city and, you know, strap something on their body and walk into a restaurant and blow themselves up and, you know, kill innocent women and children and all that. This is all demoniac. This is demonic. This is not religion. This is not religious principle. It has nothing to do with anything spiritual, anything religious. It's just that politicians, demoniac politicians, teaching demoniac things. No, they went out into a field somewhere away, and only the able-bodied men who were meant to do that, to protect the citizens, they decided who the sovereignty, who was going to be in charge. And the one that won, the other side would agree? Yes, all right, now you're in charge. So everything is meant to be done in knowledge, not just, you know, the nice things, what we would say, you know, nice things. Everything is meant to be done in transcendental knowledge. And it's not that we're meant to renounce our duties prematurely. If we try to renounce our duties prematurely, then our minds will be disturbed and we will not be able to maintain, sustain our spiritual consciousness. And that's the test. If each one of us, according to the level of realization that we are at, we need a certain amount of sensual gratification. The sannyasis need hardly anything, you know. Family persons need a little bit more facilities. But whatever the range, whatever the spectrum, or whatever need that you have, the purpose of it is to only have that sensual arrangement that we have, you know, whether it be more opulent or less opulent or whatever, is to make the mind peaceful and the senses peaceful so that we can actually think of Krishna, so that we can remember what we're doing is for the pleasure of Krishna and his senses. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. This is bhakti, this is the purpose of life, it's the purpose of devotional service. It has nothing to do with I am born in this particular religion or that particular religion, and this sectarianism and nationalism is tearing the planet apart, literally, literally tearing it apart. Unless we teach this, unless we ourselves assimilate it and teach it to others, when we leave the body, it's not a different process if you're a Hindu or an American or a Christian or you know, European or African or, you know, or Buddhist or whatever your philosophy is. When you leave the body, it's the same process. They don't have a different, you know, Hindu doctors just treat Hindus because when you leave the body, it's different. You know, you have to have an Islam doctor because when you leave the body, it's different. You know, it's not like that. Gold is gold, you know, whether it comes from here or Africa or India or Asia or Europe, gold is gold. Everybody accepts. Same value. It's not that the gold is a different value because it comes from Africa, it's a different value because it comes from this country, that country. Gold is gold. So Krishna is Krishna, God is God, the name of God is God. The soul is the soul. And the material elements are the same. You know, we have a little different color, a little different this, that, but you know, we still have this honker, you know, and the flaps on the ears and the tongue and, you know, the same parts, everything's going. You go to any country, they're doing the same things. You know, taking their kids to school and, you know, trying to live a peaceful life and trying to, you know, it's the same thing. So this is the purpose of this knowledge, Bhagavad Gita, spiritual knowledge. But not impractical spiritual knowledge, practical spiritual knowledge. Meant to help us live our lives, daily lives, practically in the consciousness that will take us to the right place. If, however, you think that the soul or the symptoms of life will always be born and die forever, you still have no reason to lament, O mighty arms. Questions? Comments? Yes.
I was reading a pastime today, Hindu Yuma Swami, when they were in Poland, and he was talking about when the Nazi sort of skinheads came in to the festival, and the bar hit a little kid and was going around just, you know, breaking up the festival and hurting a lot of devotees. and no one was really there to protect them. In this day and age, would it be okay at that point to use violence?
You have to protect yourself. You have to defend yourself. You're a devotee too. Each one of us is a devotee, and if someone comes and threatens our life, that's threatening devotional service. But not that we look for it. Intelligent man doesn't look for trouble. You can't use that as an excuse and say, oh, it's okay, so I don't like that guy, or this guy is doing something to me, or then I take the initiative and go out and do something bad to the other person. No, it's bogus. Only under the proper conditions, the proper motive for the, you know. That's why I'm saying in the beginning of the class that it's very important that we understand how to apply this philosophy. Because if you don't, then if you are immature and you think violence is okay and you see some situation and you jump in and then you cause chaos. And no, it's not like that. But if you're attacked violently, or you see another devotee being attacked violently, or even another person, anybody attacked violently, yes, you can respond and to protect that person. It's our duty. Otherwise, it's just sentiment. I know Indraduma Maharaj has many stories that he tells, you know, of how he invokes, you know, Lord Nrisimhadev's mantra and his mercy, and many of those kinds of situations dissipate just by doing that. So first of all, let's try that. The other is only a last resort. The other should be a last resort at all costs. Before this situation, there was all attempts made at diplomacy, to the point where Krishna went personally and asked Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra, please don't do this. You know, give him a village. Give the, you know, the Pandavas were the rightful, you know, heir to the throne of the earth, and they came and just asked for a village. Just one village. We're, you know, that's our nature. We're Kshatriyas, we're warriors, we're kings. We have to have something to rule. So just give us, you know. And he said, I wouldn't give you the amount of land that will fit on the head of a pin. And as they say in the West, them's fighting words. So it was provoked. It was provoked. It was all, you know, he sent Narada Muni. You know, so many exalted people went to talk to Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra, the antagonists. And they, you know, Dhritarashtra said, yes, what you say is true. I know Krishna is God and we should all be worshipping him. We shouldn't fight. He's on the other side. But I'm just too attached to my sons. What can I do? So therefore, the Bhagavad Gita says, don't become too attached to your sons. Don't become so attached to your sons and so attached to your material situation that you'll do anything at all costs and give up the world, you know, go against the whole world and all these things. This is all foolishness, ignorant foolishness. So therefore, Bhagavad Gita is very practical. It's not just some kind of poetic, you know, justice or some kind of entertainment that you read in order to just, you know, it's not just something that you come to hear once a week just to make yourself feel better for all the bad things you've done during the week. I mean, it's not like that. It's meant to be assimilated, and we're meant to change our consciousness. We're meant to change our attitudes and change our mentality, and therefore to change our behavior, you know, and to accept the regulative principles of freedom. We're thinking that if I'm regulated, if I control my senses, I lose something. I lose my freedom. But it's just the opposite. Nasti buddhir ayuktasya. We just read it. Nasti buddhir ayuktasya. Nacha yuktasya bhavana. Nacha bhavyata kshantir. Ashantasya sukhasva. You know, without being fixed in devotional service, unless your intelligence is fixed in devotional service, you can't be peaceful. And without peace, you can't have happiness. So what is our interest? What is our self-interest? To just do what we think we want to do, what our, you know, genitals or our tongue tell us to do, or our senses tell us to do whenever we want? No. That's not going to get us freedom. Whenever we do that, what happens? Then we get an anxiety and we sweat, and you know, and we, you know, and other people start to look at us funny, and I mean, and there's this whole reaction that comes. But if we're actually engaged in devotional service, and if we follow the principles strictly, our minds become peaceful. We regulate our lives according to the Vedas, not whimsically. Not whimsically, but according to the laws of nature. The sun's coming up in the morning, the sun's going down at night. You can't see at night. Now they've made all this artificial light so you can go about your business and do whatever you want 24 hours. But what is the result of that? Has anybody worked graveyard shifts? I have. I've worked graveyard shifts. Where you're working at night and sleeping during the day. Oh, man. You feel horrible. Horrible. You're out of sync with the whole thing. You know? Right? You're out of sync with the whole world, you know. Try to, you know, work at night and sleep during the day. But they've created this situation, and this is progress, you know. In the name of what? So I can make money 24 hours a day instead of only 12? I mean, it's just ridiculous, actually. And we should know it's ridiculous. And we should stand up and behave properly. You know, we have some limited, we don't have complete free will, we have limited free will, but with that limited free will, we can choose to do the right things, you know, to have an occupation that's relatively innocent, you know, there's many things you can do. We have this ability, so we could use that. This is the whole purpose of independence, to use it properly in order to awaken our love for Krishna. So we have Krishna consciousness is not for dullard. It's not for dullards, and it's not for foolish people. You know, Krishna consciousness is for intelligent people. You can't fake it, at least not forever, for not very long. The symptoms are given. The symptoms are clear. Those are the symptoms we just read, the divine nature. And at the end of the 12th chapter, you know, the symptoms of a person who's actually pleasing Krishna are given. One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego, who is equal both in happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me. Such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. He by whom no one is put into difficulty, and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. My devotee who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. That doesn't mean that we don't work. It doesn't mean that we don't try to, you know, do the things that we need to do and get the energy that we have to put in the mouth to make the body and soul keep it together. But not more. We chant every Wednesday night, we chant the Ishopanishad. Not more than is your quota. Not more than you need to keep your body and soul together peacefully. It may differ from one person to another, but not more than you need. One person may more need more than another person. It's not, you know, it's not a template. Vaishya has been talking about this lately. It's not that we can just cookie cut, you know, make a cookie and then cut the cookie and then, you know, every one of us comes out exactly the same like the cookie, or every yatra comes out like it's been cut by the same cookie cutter. It's not like that. One who neither rejoices nor grieves, nor laments, who neither laments nor desires, who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and defeat. How can you, if you're teaching your children and people to that this is your friend and this is your enemy, then how can you be pleasing God? It's not possible. Not possible. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent and satisfied with anything. So here you may say, oh, that means I should go away from my job, or I should go away from this, or go away from that. No, it means that when you're there, you're not taking the association. You're not submissive to that association. You may have to do what you have to do in order to do your duty and do your job and to take care of whatever. But you don't have to be influenced by that. And the way you do that is to keep your mind fixed on what you're doing and your consciousness connected with Krishna through the proper understanding of what you're doing. Always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, who is fixed in knowledge and who is engaged in devotional service, such a person is very dear to me. So doesn't care for any residence. That doesn't mean you let your apartment or your house go to pot, you know. It means you know, what is the Bhaktivinoda Thakur song? Griha Thako, Vani Thako. We chant that a lot here. And it means that the house is yours, wife is yours, children are yours, everything is yours. This is all Krishna's devotees. And we live like that, and we think like that, and we feel like that, and we will like that. And then Krishna, he likes that. So within the heart, he gives you intelligence. Huh? This is Krishna consciousness. Tesham sadadiyuktanam, bhajatam pritipurvakam. Priti, bhajatam, worship Krishna, priti, with love. Not with discrimination, not with, you know, hate towards others, or we're the right thing, and they're the wrong thing, and not that us being right depends on me, you know, convincing others that everyone else is wrong. That's not logical. What to speak of being spiritual, it's not even logical. It doesn't make any sense. That's philosophy and religion and the mode of ignorance. And it will take you down. Who is fixed in knowledge and who is engaged in devotional service. Such a person is very dear to me. Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me. So everybody knows this principle, everyone. If your child or your wife, your husband or your employer or your teacher or are dependable over time, then you get faith in them. If you're reliable over time, then you breed faith. If you're unreliable over time, then you breed heartache and disappointment and faithlessness and all these things. It's clear. So apply that principle to your lives across the board, and particularly when it comes to your relationship with Krishna. Be reliable. Chant your rounds. Stay clean. You know. Offer what you have to the deities. Improve the cleanliness and quality and everything. Improve. Sustain it. And the effort that it takes with your mind and your body and your senses and your intelligence, and to do that, that keeps us healthy in Krishna consciousness. It keeps us healthy in spiritual life. Not that we, you know, go back. You know, what's the teaching? There's many in India, it's very common. You know, don't chant because I'm not pure. You know, you can't chant because you see so many people standing in the kirtan, in the middle of an ecstatic kirtan, and their mouths are just... And if you ask them, if you scratch deep enough, you'll find out, I can't chant because I'm not pure. How are you going to get pure? If you don't chant, how are you going to get pure? Well, there's no answers. This is stupidity. This is the way my dad did it. This is the way my parents did it. This is the way my grandmother did it, or grandfather did it. No, Each one of us is a soul, and we have to take this Krishna consciousness ourselves as an individual. No excuse. It's not that one person's a soul and another person's not a soul. Everyone's soul. Krishna's there in the heart of everyone. He says, Sarvasicha hamridhanavishto, matakspirtir jnanamaponamcha. God is there in the heart of everyone. No excuse. You turn you actually turn your face to Him, He's there, reliable. Tesham saradiyuktanam, bhajatam priti purvakam, with love especially. Dadami buddhi yogam tam, and then He gives you the intelligence. That's where spiritual intelligence comes from. It's the form direction from the super soul to the soul. Buddha bhava samamita. This is surrender. It's process. It's not just sentiment. You can't surrender sentimentally. There's a process. There are things that take you there. There are things that take you away from there. You have to accept the things that take you there and reject the things that take you away from there. And then you will feel the presence of the Lord during the day and feel protected. If you're feeling the presence of the Lord during the day in your heart, and seeing Krishna in the hearts of others, then you'll automatically feel protected. And then you'll want to do what Krishna wants you to do. They say in the Bible, not my but thy will, O Lord. It's the same exact instruction. All religious principles are the same. Then you become humble. Then because you humility means you realize who you are in relationship with God. Very tiny, insignificant. Not that you can control, you know, this country or this even another person, you know. You can't. As soon as you try to control, you know, others, rather than being the servants of others and cooperate like that in loving service, then the whole thing becomes tense and conflicting and Hare Krishna. Okay, I'm starting to repeat myself. I'm starting to ramble. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Bhagavad Gita ki.
Jai.
Gaur Premanandi.
Jai.
Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
All glories to the assembled devotees.
Jai.
Glories to the assembled devotees.
Jai.
Glories to the assembled devotees. I want you to know that, tomorrow I'm flying to Dallas, so I won't see you again for a few months. But, I'll be back if you have me. If you'll have me, there, I'll be back. But I just want you to know that there's many people out there in the world who are watching you and learning and getting inspired by what you're doing here. That you're, you know, staying in where you are in your family situations and you're raising your kids and whatever, and still going out and trying to help other people and distribute books. You're an inspiration for a lot of people. So please don't forget that. And this is avant-garde, as we say. It's cutting edge. What you're doing here is cutting edge. It's cutting edge. You know, there was a time when the temples in America were thriving and it was just a whole different thing because everybody lived in the temples. You know, we didn't have congregations in those days. And then it changed, you know. And now you're doing something that is foundational. It's foundational. It's our movement changing from monastic situation to congregational, eventually to a minority religion, really, or spiritual community. So, congratulations. Hare Krishna. Keep up the good work. Okay. That's it? Yeah. That is a kirtan. I can't wait. You can do the kirtan.
Keshav Vardhi Maharaj, ki
jai.
Come back soon, please.
Ki jai.